I have a question for you all today. Have you ever counted your blessings? Now, even though sometimes it may not feel like it, especially in comparison to many people in the world who seem better off than us, we are blessed far more than they. Now, you may know some people that have lots of money, and they may seem really blessed, especially when they keep saying that they are blessed. Yeah, bless the Lord. He has blessed me every single day. And that God has answered my prayers. But have you ever wondered to yourself, no, why is that the case? It's like, how come it seems like other people in the world seem like they're more blessed than we are? But how blessed are they really? And will they ever have that money forever, or the blessings that they may have? Most of the things they are blessed in are physical possessions. Sure, there are many people who have money and have physical possessions, and we could assume that they are happy, right? Well, oftentimes they are not. For one example, look at a lot of famous people in this world today, or anybody that lives in Beverly Hills. So how are we more blessed than they? We may not be more physically blessed, but we certainly are more spiritually blessed. See, we have been handpicked by God the Father to have a chance to be in His kingdom and receive everlasting life. We have more knowledge than the world when it comes to spiritual matters and what the Bible has to say, because our minds have been opened. The riches and physical things could very well be considered a distraction from what is more important. These physical blessings that the world dwells on now is only temporary, and that time will come when all these physical blessings will mean absolutely nothing anymore. Times will get terrible, and money won't be able to buy anything. Now we could read about in Ezekiel chapter 7, verse 19, which has already been quoted earlier in the sermon. The world as a whole is all about getting rather than giving. Many people expect money as well and will get disappointed when they don't get it. For example, two friends, they bumped into each other one day in the street. One of them looked forlorn, almost on the verge of tears. His friend asked, "What has the world done to you, my old friend?" The sad fellow said, "3 weeks ago, an uncle died and left me $40,000. That's a lot of money. But you see, 2 weeks ago, a cousin I never knew died and left me $85,000 free and clear." "Sounds like you've been blessed." "You don't understand," he interrupted. "Last week, my great aunt passed away. I inherited almost $250,000. Now, the other gentleman was really confused. "Then why do you look so glum?" "Well, this week, nothing." In this example, the person was so blinded by riches, didn't even care that his family members were passing away left and right. Now, this individual was clearly about getting. Now, we know that we shouldn't act that way. And how can we prove that? One reason is where we are and what we are doing right now. We are celebrating the Feast of Tabernacles, as commanded. And during that time, we experience a lot of giving and a lot of sharing. It is certainly a joyous occasion, different than what we are used to when we are back at home. This temporary time we experience now, we will be experiencing it in the future. But it's not only going to last 8 days. This is something that's going to last forever. And we've heard plenty of that during the feast. So what a great time that will be. Now, have we all at one time or another had money problems? Maybe we have money problems right now. Maybe we spent a little too much more second tithe than we actually have. See, those that don't have enough may struggle at times with our spending habits and making sacrifices. Those who have more than they need struggle also because they don't know what to do with that money and they can't decide what to spend it on. So if I am referring to anybody here with that problem, I will see you right over there in the back corner at the services. So again, have you ever tried to count your blessings? Have you ever realized just how much more blessed we are than not? If we live God's way and do what God says, there would be no reason for us to be blessed, right? For us not to be blessed. Yes, we go through trials because God tests us to see just how strong we are and just how willing we are to keep His law. These trials, of course, may be difficult at times, but they are never too difficult for us to handle. Remember, if we get through these trials, we get rewarded for them with blessings. This is only the beginning. We will have blessings far more than we can ever imagine. Blessings that no one on this earth has ever experienced, save this time. Now, how many people in the world today can say that? At times, it may be very difficult to comprehend, but history has shown us through the Bible how several people have been blessed so tremendously, and all it took was faith in following God's instruction. It's easy. It is very difficult to speak towards the end of the feast, of course, since there's such a great chance that my topic will be taken and picked by somebody else, and it has been close, especially on the individual that I'm going to be talking about. The example has been touched upon several times during the feast, but there's always an advantage because you're going to remember my sermon over anybody else so far. No, just kidding. I try to pick a topic hoping that that would not happen, but has to some extent, and this person, example I'm going to talk about specifically, is going to be Abraham. He has been given many promises for God, or by God, for what he had done. Now, what I would like to do when I talk about Abraham is put yourself in his position as we go through his life. Perhaps we have been in a similar position or been through something like that in our life. So let us begin at the beginning of the book, in Genesis chapter 12. Genesis chapter 12, verse 1. Now the Lord had said to Abraham, "Get out of your country, from your family, from your father's house, to land that I will show you." Now here God starts off with a vital test to see if Abraham is going to obey him right from the start. Now hasn't this happened to some of us in the past? Have we not moved away from our parents? Say, not everybody here, but a lot of you, especially with my family. When we were called, perhaps out of the country, out of state, perhaps not even knowing what's going to happen, especially if you can't speak any English, what would happen when you moved? But right away in verse 2, God already makes a promise to Abraham. "I will make you a great nation. I will bless you and make your name great, and you shall be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and I will curse him who curses you. And in you all, the families of earth shall be blessed." So obviously with that kind of a promise, you know, he was going to be rewarded for following God's instruction. But that's the key. He had to follow God's instruction. So let's read now verses 4 through 9 and see what Abraham had done. "Abram departed as the Lord had spoken to him, and Lot went with him. Abram was 75 years old when he departed from Haran. Then Abram took Sarai, his wife, and Lot, his brother's son, and all their possessions, and they had gathered the people whom they had acquired in Haran, and they departed to go to the land of Canaan. So they came to the land of Canaan. Abram passed through the land to the place of Shechem as far as Terebinth tree of Moriah, and the Canaanites were then in the land. Then the Lord appeared to Abram and said, to your descendants I will give this land. And there will be built an altar to the Lord who had appeared to him. And he moved from there to the mountain east of Bethel, and he pitched his tent with Bethel on the west and Ai on the east. There he built an altar to the Lord and called on the name of the Lord. So Abram journeyed, going still toward the south. Now, as you can see here, he did have faith in God in this matter. However, he was still human, and his faith was not strong in other matters, as we will read next. And we have all been there before. Haven't we tried to put matters into our own hands, forgetting about God? Not purposely, but it's just human nature. So in verse 10, we read there was a famine in the land, and Abram went down to Egypt to dwell there, for the famine was severe in the land. It came to pass when he was close to entering Egypt that he said to Sarai, his wife, "Indeed, I know that you are a woman of beautiful countenance. Therefore, it will happen when the Egyptians see you that they will say, 'This is his wife,' and they will kill me, but they will let you live. Please say you are my sister, that it may be well with me for your sake, that I may live because of you." So it was when Abram came into Egypt that the Egyptians saw the woman, that she was very beautiful. The princes of Pharaoh also saw her and commended her to Pharaoh, and the woman was taken to Pharaoh's house. Verse 16, he treated Abram well for her sake. He had sheep, oxen, male donkeys, male and female servants, female donkeys, and camels. But the Lord plagued Pharaoh and his house with great plagues because of Sarai, Abram's wife. Now, notice he didn't do that to Abram, but he did it to Pharaoh. And Pharaoh called Abram and said, "What is this you have done to me? Why did you tell me that she was your wife? Why did you say, 'She is my sister'? I might have taken her as my wife. Now, therefore, here's your wife, take her and go your way." Now, I don't think Abram expected that to happen. So in verse 20, Pharaoh commanded his men concerning him, and they sent him away with his wife and all that he had. Abram probably thought, you know, they were going to kill him, because that's what he had said in the beginning. Now, with that, let's want to read actually chapter 13, because I'm going to make a point of that later, because it's going to happen on later on in his life again. And verse 13, starting with verse 1, he went up from Egypt, he and his wife, and all that he had, and Lot with him to the south. Now, Abram was very rich in livestock, in silver, and in gold, and we have heard about that from Rob Harris, I believe it was Rob Harris, or Ray? Ah, it was Ray. Okay. It was Ray in his sermon about gold earlier. Now, he was very wealthy, and he didn't actually, at that point, have to do anything, because, humanly speaking, he was far more blessed than anybody else in the world. So, you know, he could just say, "You know, I have everything I need. Why would I have to travel to another land and do what you say?" But there's obviously a reason for it. Verse 3, he went on his journey from the south as far as Bethel to the place where his tent had been at the beginning between Bethel and Ai, to the place of the altar which he had made there at first, and there Abram called the name of the Lord. And Lot also went with him, and he also had lots of flocks and herds and tents. Notice also, they didn't have any transportation back then. They had to walk, and they walked quite a journey, just like our parents did when they had to go to school or work, walking 20 miles in the snow, uphill, barefoot, who knows. So in verse 6, the land was not able to support them that they might dwell together. If a land can't support all the possessions that they had, I mean, we're talking about a lot of things that they had. Very, very wealthy indeed. Possessions were so great that they could not dwell together. There was a strife between the herdsmen of Abram's livestock and the herdsmen of Lot's livestock, the Canaanites and the Perizzites, and dwelt in the land. Abram said to Lot, "Please let there be no strife between you and me, and between my herdsmen and your herdsmen, for we are brethren. Is not the whole land before you? Please separate from me. If you take the left, then I will go right. Or if you go to the right, then I will go to the left." But that didn't last long, because the next verse, Lot lifted his eyes and saw the plain of Jordan, that it was well watered everywhere, before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah, of course, and then, like the garden of the Lord, like the land of Egypt, as you go toward Zoar. Then Lot chose for himself. So all that about, let's choose what we're going to do here, he chose for himself. Pretty selfish. All the plain of Jordan, and Lot journeyed east, and they separated from each other. So Abram dwelt in the land of Canaan, and Lot dwelt in the cities of the plain, and pitched his tent even as far as Sodom. How enticing a city could be, so you think. But the men of Sodom were exceedingly wicked and sinful against the Lord. The Lord said to Abram, after Lot has separated from him, lift your eyes now and look from the place where you are, northward, southward, eastward, and westward. For all the land which you see, I give to you and your descendants forever. And I will make your descendants as the dust of the earth, so that if a man could number the dust of the earth, then your descendants also could be numbered. Now this, I'm sure at that point, Abraham was thinking to himself, how can this be? This is a blessing far more than I can comprehend. Arise, walk in the land through its length and its width, for I give it to you. Verse 18, Abraham moved his tent and went and dwelt by the terebinth trees of Mamre, which are in Hebron, and built an altar there to the Lord. Which was also a thank you note, or thank you to God for what he is doing for him. Now, Abram was very close to God, and God gave him many promises of what is to come in the future. And Abram was well blessed. Well, let's skip forward to chapter 17. We're going to read about the sign of the covenant that God had given to Abram. And I'll read from 17, verse 1 to 10. If you haven't noticed so far, today is the day of reading. So, start off by Caleb. So when Abram was 99 years old, the Lord appeared to Abram and said to him, I am Almighty God, walk before me and be blameless. And I will make my covenant between me and you, and will multiply you exceedingly. Now, hasn't he already made a promise like this earlier? For some reason, I don't know if it struck him now, because in the next verse, Abram fell on his face. Oh, wait, I'm sorry. I'm ahead of myself. Never mind. I'll admit that. Abram fell on his face, and God talked with him, saying, as for me, behold, my covenant is with you, and you shall be father of many nations. No longer shall your name be called Abram, but your name shall be Abraham, for I have made you a father of many nations. I will make you exceedingly fruitful, and I will make nations of you, and kings shall come from you. I will establish my covenant between me and you and your descendants after you and their generations for an everlasting covenant, possession, and I will be their God. To be God to you and your descendants after you. In verse 8, also I give to you and your descendants after you the land in which you are a stranger, all land of Canaan, as an everlasting possession. I'll be their God. In verse 9, and God said to Abraham, as for you, here's the catch, you shall keep my covenant, you and your descendants after you throughout their generation. So it's not just him. Now he has to have his descendants do the same thing. This is my covenant which you shall keep between me and you, your descendants after you. Every male child among you shall be circumcised. Now at this point, after all these things that God had promised, things that could not be comprehended in human terms, one would think that nothing is impossible for God to do. Even after all these things were said to Abram, he still had doubt about other things. And that's what I want to talk about. And we read that in verse 15 of the same chapter. Verse 15 through 19. Then God said to Abraham, as for Sarai, your wife, you shall not call her name Sarai, but Sarah shall be her name. And I will bless her and also give you a son by her. Then I will bless her, and she shall be a mother of nations, kings of peoples shall be from her. So, now, in verse 17. This is where, was too confusing for Abraham, because he now fell on his face and laughed at that. Now, have you ever talked to anybody and told them something serious where they actually fell down on their face and laughed at you. I mean, that'd be pretty embarrassing and insulting. But how do you think God felt at that moment when Abraham did that after all these things that he promised him? And Abraham said in his heart, "Shall a child be born to a man who is 100 years old? And shall Sarah, who is 90 years old, bear a child?" People complain this day and age at their mid-30s. Like, woo, I'm too old to have a child. No way. So Abraham said to God, "Oh, that Ishmael might live before you." Verse 19, God said, "No, Sarah, your wife, shall bear you a son, and you shall call his name Isaac. I will establish my covenant with him for an everlasting covenant and with his descendants after him." And also skip over to chapter 18, verse 10 through 15. Chapter 18, verse 10 through 15. And he said, "I will certainly return to you according to the time of life, and behold, Sarah, your wife, shall have a son." Now Sarah was listening in the tent door, which was behind him. And now Abraham and Sarah were old, well advanced in age, and Sarah had passed the age of childbearing. But Sarah had the same kind of expression, well, not to the full extent, but also had some doubt within her, because she laughed in within herself, saying, "After I have grown old, shall I have pleasure, my Lord, being old also?" And the Lord said to Abraham, "Why did Sarah laugh, saying, 'Shall I surely bear a child since I am old?'" Verse 14, "Is anything too hard for the Lord? At the appointed time, I will return to you according to the time of life, and Sarah shall have a son." And verse 15, "But Sarah denied it, saying, 'I did not laugh, for she was afraid.' And he said, 'No, but you did laugh.'" See, we may sometimes be in a similar situation, forgetting how God continues to bless us. And sometimes we may even take things for granted. But as soon as a trial comes upon us, we start to remember more and more that only God can help us and that He blesses us when we get through those trials. Now, in the next example, we have Abraham talking with God, pleading with Him not to destroy the city of God, of Sodom and Gomorrah. And in verse 23 of the same chapter, skipping ahead, Abraham came near and said to God, "Would you also destroy the righteous with the wicked?" And he asked the question, "Suppose there were 50 righteous within the city, would you also destroy the place and not spare it for the 50 righteous that were in it?" As God wouldn't know that. And verse 25, "Far be it from you to do such a thing as this." Here we have Abraham reminding God what he should do, you know, in his own way. "To slay the righteous with the wicked, so that the righteous should be as the wicked. Far be it from you, shall not the judge of all the earth do right?" Now, Abraham knew that there was nothing that God could not do. There was nothing impossible through him. But here we have a human being who God had created, which he could strike dead at any moment, reminding the Almighty Father, the Creator of life, what he should do. But believe it or not, we actually do the same thing as well. And God actually likes when we do that. And when do we do that? We do that when we pray. And we read about that in Matthew chapter 7, verse 7 and 11. I won't go read that. But when we do pray, don't we ask the Father or sometimes plead with Him? Well, a lot of times we do. For something, I mean, He already knows. But see, He wants us to develop a relationship with Him, and He wants us to show fear, humility. He wants us to show that we have faith, and we are very humble. And so we try to reason with God when there is something very important to us for God to understand. God already knows what we think about, but He wants us to see that we have faith in Him, and that we have a relationship with Him. Clearly, Abraham had a relationship with God. And as the rest of the chapter continues, Abraham did plead with God about saving the city. And in verse 32 of chapter 18, he said, "Let not the Lord be angry, and I will speak but once more," after he already mentioned five or six times Suppose 10 should be found there. And he said, I will not destroy it for the sake of 10. God answering, of course. Verse 33, so the Lord went his way as soon as he had finished speaking with Abraham, and Abraham returned to his place. So in chapter 19, as we all know, we read about Sodom and Gomorrah, and it was destroyed because of the wickedness, and yet there were not even 10 people in the city that could be saved, just Lot and his family, most of his family. And we all know the same thing is going to happen in the future. But this time, not only one city is going to be affected, but the whole world is going to be affected. So now in the next chapter, we see that Abraham still had not learned his lesson, once again. And he did the same exact sin he had done earlier. This should also give us a reminder how we continue to sin, even if we commit the same sin. It also goes to show us just how patient God, in fact, is. And the sin I'm talking about is when, in chapter 20, where Abraham had journeyed, and let's just read in verse 2. He said to Sarah, his wife, she is my sister, and Abimelech, king of Gerar, sent and took Sarah. But God came to Abimelech in a dream by night and said to him, indeed you are a dead man because of the woman whom you have taken, for she is a man's wife. And notice again that God is going to Abimelech, not to Abraham. Because, figures out, I mean, they obviously, Pharaoh as well as Abimelech knew that Abraham was a prophet of God. And verse 4, but Abimelech had not come near her, and he said, Lord, will you slay a righteous nation also? Did he not say to me, she is my sister? And she even herself said, he's my brother. In the integrity of my heart and innocence of my hands, I have done this. God said to him in the dream, yes, I know that you did this in integrity of your heart, for I also withheld you from sinning against me. Therefore, I did not let you touch her. Now, therefore, restore the man's wife, for he is a prophet, and he will pray for you, and you shall live. But if you do not restore her, know that you shall surely die, you and all who are yours. Abimelech rose early in the morning, called his servants, and told all these things, and their hearing and the men were very much afraid. So verse 9, Abimelech called Abraham and said to him, what have you done to us? How have I offended you that you have brought on me and my kingdom a great sin? You have done deeds to me that ought not to be done. Abimelech said to Abraham, what did you have in view that you've done this thing? Abraham said, because I thought, surely the fear of God is not in his place, and they will kill me on the account of my wife. Again, forgetting that God is there for him. In verse 12, indeed, she is truly my sister. She is the daughter of my father, but not the daughter of my mother, and she became my wife. No, it wasn't a full lie, it was just a white lie. And verse 13, it came to pass, when God caused me to wander from my father's house, that I said to her, this is your kindness that you should do for me in every place, wherever we go. Say of me, he is my brother. So then, you know, Abimelech took the things from Abraham, and he restored Sarah, his wife, to him. But see, again, I don't think Abraham expected this. Abimelech said, see, my land is before you, dwell where it pleases you. Again, Abraham thought that Abimelech may kill him because of that. And once again, he was mistaken. Thought he would learn his lesson by now. In verse 16, Sarah, he said, behold, I have given your brother 1,000 pieces of silver. Not only that, gives him a lot of money. 1,000 pieces, I mean, I don't even want to know how much that is today. Ray may know. You could ask him. Indeed, this vindicates you before all who are with you and before everybody. Thus she was rebuked. So, yet again, throughout Abraham's life, of course, he had been tested. Still, this was yet another test he had to go through. And we are continuously tested just as much. And this faith would be determined, actually, in the next chapter. And this is his biggest test, right here, in chapter 22. And in verse 1, starting in verse 1 through 3, came to pass after these things, God tested Abraham and said to him, Abraham, he said, here I am. And he said, take now your son, your only son Isaac, whom you love, go to the land of Moriah and offer him there as a burnt offering on one of the mountains of which I shall tell you. I'm sure Abraham was a little confused at this point, but, I mean, you don't see anywhere in the scripture here that he hesitated and he complained about it. Because I think at this point, after all these lessons he has been taught so far, that just had to put his faith in God. And from everything that he knew from God, I mean, he knows that God's not a murderer. So, in verse 3, Abraham rose early in the morning and saddled his donkey and took two of his young men with him and Isaac his son, split the wood for the burnt offering, and arose and went to the place of which God had told him. And skipping to verse 6, Abraham took the wood, the burnt offering, and laid it on Isaac his son, and took the fire in his hand and a knife, and the two of them went together. But Isaac spoke to Abraham his father and said, my father, he said, here I am, my son. He said, look at the fire and the wood. But where is the lamb for the burnt offering? And Abraham said, my son, God will provide for himself the lamb for a burnt offering. So the two of them went together. Then they came to the place of which God had told them. Abraham built an altar there and placed the wood in order. And he bound Isaac his son and laid him on the altar upon the wood. In verse 10, Abraham stretched out his hand and took the knife to slay his son. But the angel of the Lord called to him from heaven, saying, Abraham, Abraham. So he said, here I am. And he said, do not lay your hand on the lad or do anything to him, for now I know that you fear God, since you have not withheld your son, your only son, from me. And skipping to verse 16, he said, by myself I have sworn, says the Lord, because you have done this thing and have not withheld your son, your only son. Blessing, I will bless you. Multiply, I will multiply you. Your descendants and the stars of the heaven and the sand which is on the seashore. And your descendants shall possess the gates of their enemies. If we're ever in a trial like that, it's that extreme, can we actually go through with it? Yet again, Abraham is continuously being promised for blessing. And he was blessed. And we too will be blessed if we follow God. But we will also be continuously blessed, just like Abraham was. Now, even though Abraham was not perfect, he pleased God in many things. And he really proved to God just how faithful he was towards the end of his life. And God does the same thing to us if we see that we can pass. And he continues to test us to see how strong we are in our hearts. Now you can read about 1 Thessalonians chapter 2 and verse 4. 1 Thessalonians 2, 4. But I would like to turn to James chapter 1. James chapter 1, verse 2 through 4. My brethren, count it all joy when you fall into various trials, knowing that the testing of your faith produces patience. But let patience have its perfect work, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking nothing. Always remember what blessings will come out of it when we pass the test. Always remember they will come out of it. We will be rewarded. Now we have to also be careful that if we are continuously blessed and we continue getting blessings, that we make sure that doesn't go to our head like it did to King Uzziah. And look what happened when his blessings went to his head, developed leprosy. Yeah. So we can't let that happen, obviously. But to summarize what we have learned today with Abraham, I'd like to turn over to Hebrews, a couple pages back. Hebrews chapter 11. Verse 8 through 12. And I was a little nervous, actually, when Kalen was giving his sermon, because he got dangerously close to my scriptures. And I had no backup plan. So in verse 8 of chapter 11. By faith, Abraham obeyed when he was called to go out to the place which he would receive as an inheritance, and he went out not knowing where he was going. By faith, he dwelt in the land of promise, as in a foreign country, as some of us had to do, dwelling in tents with Isaac and Jacob, the heirs with him of the same promise. For he waited for the city, which has foundations, whose builder and maker is God. And also by faith, Sarah herself received strength to conceive seed, and she bore a child when she was past the age, because she judged him faithful who had promised. Therefore, from one man, and him as good as dead, were born as many as the stars of the sky in multitude, innumerable as the sand which is by the seashore. And skipping to verse 17, by faith Abraham, when he was tested, offered up Isaac, and he who had received the promises offered up his only begotten son, of whom it was said, in Isaac your seed shall be called. And verse 19, concluding that God was able to raise him up even from the dead, from which he also received him in a figurative sense. Now, since we also should follow in his footsteps, God promises the same thing to us in chapter 12, verse 1 and 2 of Hebrews. Therefore we also, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which so easily ensnares us, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and has sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Could also please turn to James chapter 1 for the final scripture. Have I reached 5-minute mark? Good. I have more time. No. James chapter 1, verse 12. Blessed is the man who endures temptation, for when he has been approved, he will receive the crown of life, which the Lord has promised to those who love him. Now, this is a tremendous blessing for us, something that we should continue to strive for, and is indeed God's plan for each and every one of us. We have been tremendously blessed thus far, having the wisdom and knowledge about God's plan before anybody else in the world. So how do we know that? Again, because we are keeping the feast. We have a sneak preview of what God has in store for this world and what he has in store for us. This time will come when we won't be able to count our blessings, because we'll be blessed far more than can be imagined, and possibly far more than we can count. My title of the sermon is Count Your Blessings, in case you didn't know that. Now, with all that said, does that not sound appealing to us?